was ever good. I've never done it that many times, but that was the first. Good morning. Hello. Welcome.
Morning.
What I normally don't do a whole lot of, and the weird part about it, and maybe if people have listened to every episode, and it might get annoying to hear me explain the same few things a few times. But what I don't normally do is I don't really treat this like it's like an interview thing and like a whole like intro thing, because like if people see your name in the description, they know who you are. I'm not going to go all these things leading up to then saying your name, which is already the lead is buried in the name of the episode. So, hello, Vinny. What's up, man?
Hey, Corey. Thanks for having me on, brother.
Yeah, man. I'm excited, man. I'm excited too. This might be the first international. No, not the first international, but this is definitely one of a few that I've done. It's difficult to navigate time zones. I get that, like, yes. I get that it's like, oh yeah, 5 hours ahead, and then I gotta go, oh god, I gotta count. I'm bad enough at telling time as it is. If you give me an analog clock, I'm gonna be like, give me digital.
Yeah, man, I'm the same, man. Like, I've been on a few American podcasts, and it's so hard to get the scheduling down, especially on the West Coast, because the 8 hour time difference does be pretty intense. Like, we've had Beige get up so early, Beige from Return to Critics. We've had made him get up so early to come on the show. It's been crazy. I did one with Dylan Jukebox as well. I did one with him, like, it was midnight here. And it was like evening time there, and I was so tired, dude. Oh my god, it was like 1 a.m. by the time we finished recording. I was so tired. It's awesome though. Like, you know, it's cool to get out there and like talk to my American brothers across the pond.
Well, I thought anybody who's like in that group of folks that Dylan put together, I wanted to just kind of like connect with everybody and us kind of collaborate in any way we can with each other and just kind of be resources for each other.
That's awesome, man. I really appreciate you having me on, man. It's been a little while since I have been on a podcast. I used to do podcasting back during the pandemic majorly for about like 2 years. Did a horror podcast, Invasion of Poly Snatchers. I stopped doing that at the start of the year to concentrate more on writing, because I really needed to get this book finished before I went insane trying to get this book finished. So that's pretty much my journey.
Are you saying you're currently on a break, though? Is that what I just saw?
I haven't released any new podcast stuff in about 6-7 months since early spring, summer. I'll have an announcement on that side of things in the near future. I just can't really disclose that right now because I'm kind of sworn to secrecy because someone else is, you know what I mean, calling the shots. So, but I let's just say I'm you know, tales of my death may be more exaggerated, you know, than previously thought. Like, so, you know, maybe really I'm coming back.
You know what I love, man? It's something like it's secretly in the back of my head. Anytime somebody goes like, I have an announcement to make, I'm like, I automatically in the back of my head go, stop announcing stuff. Stop announcing stuff. Just do the thing. Don't announce it. Like, yeah, because a lot of times people will go, I have an announcement to make, and then they never do the thing that they announce that they're gonna say, like that they say they're gonna do, yeah. Or like they go, this is gonna be life changing, and then they do like one episode of a podcast and then never go back. So, like, stop announcing. You can chill with the announcements, like press for immediate release, the press release. And you got to be consistent first.
Yeah. Oh man, we like with podcasting, we did like over like 100 different recordings of in previous different iterations. We did like an interview show, because I think what the problem was for a long time is we didn't know what we wanted to be, and we tried to be everything. And then eventually we realized what we were good at was really focusing on horror movies, something that we're really passionate about. And we tried to make the switch over to YouTube from Spotify. We did kind of pretty decently on Spotify from, you know, two guys from small towns in Ireland trying to create a fan base from pretty much scratch. And we did okay for a little while, but like, you know, it's just like, I've got, like, you know, I write part-time, I work, you know, as well in the evenings. So I literally had to kind of weigh up, like, you know, the getting the book done became everything. So that's the only reason I kind of, one of the main reasons I stopped doing podcasting for the past 6 or 7 months, because I have a novel coming out and I just kind of really wanted to get that across the line because it was kicking my ass.
The question I was asking was, are you taking a break from writing? Are you done? Are you like...
Oh, no, God, no.
No.
That's the only thing that keeps me sane, man. I know writing's my ultimate escape. I live in a small village, a tiny village. I know literally nobody here. So like, writing is my great escape. I work and I write. I work and I write. That's what I do.
is it fiction that you're working on? What kind of writing are you doing?
The first novel is going to be a horror western. It's titled River of Bones, illustrated by the absolutely incredible Tia Marjorand. The story is set post-Civil War America, where everything is kind of like, the reason I picked that period of time is because everything was kind of like in upheaval, and nobody was understanding like what the ramifications truly were going to be from the outcome of the Union beating the Confederacy and all this kind of stuff. And that was a very intriguing moment in time for me. And I thought, because of the lawlessness that was going on in the territories at that time, that, and the way Native Americans were being treated, that I thought was ripe for storytelling. And I'm like, you know what? Not a lot of horror movies or a lot of horror stories take place in the Old West. I was like, let's throw a sprinkle of werewolves in there. So I used the post-Civil War background, but it's mainly a horror story. There's lots of skinwalker lore, lots of werewolves, all that kind of stuff. I don't hold back on the monsters. But at the end of the day, it's a revenge story, pretty much.
What's your favorite kind, man? What's your favorite kind of horror? Like, what's when you're doing a horror movie review podcast, what's like your ultimate, like, here's the formula that I love the most? What would you say, like, your top five horror movies would be?
Ooh, top five. Ooh, it's like Sophie's Choice all of a sudden over here. But yeah, my number one favorite horror movie of all time is The Thing. What I look for in, what I try to do when I write, and hopefully people will see that, is I like my pacing to be kind of slow at the beginning. I will give you something, and then I like to slow the story down. And I love horror movies that give you something at the start and then slow the story down, let you kind of give you that kind of false sense of almost security. And then all of a sudden you pick the pace back up again and you realize that you're in the shit. And like, my favorite horror movies do that. I look at The Thing, Halloween, Predator, like a lot of these movies, like, which Halloween? Oh, that's three. Yeah, I'd be counting them on my fingers too. I was it's hard to pick, but like, because there's so many.
It's funny that you thought I was talking about Halloween 3 when I was doing that. That's funny too, because Halloween 3 is a classic. You can't mess with that.
I don't know, dude. I think Halloween 3 would have been so much better than any other franchise.
Yeah,
if that makes any sense.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if it's its own standalone thing, it would be its own thing. But it's funny that they called it it's just the humor of it. Just the just like the head scratching of it. Like, what the
John Carpenter initially thought that after the first two Halloween movies that the Michael Myers story was told out. And he decided that if we're going to continue with the Halloween franchise, that we should actually make it an anthology series. So he wanted to continue on Halloween 3, 4, 5, and 6, but being a different tale, a different Halloween tale every movie. So Halloween 3 was the start of an experiment, and everyone was like, seriously? Halloween without Michael Myers? It's like, if it was called Season of the Witch, I think everybody would love it today. I think everybody would love it. But it's so divisive because of what franchise it's in. But I think it's a cool movie. I just don't think it's a Halloween movie.
It's totally hits that anthology button. Like, you could totally see it being an episode of Black Mirror or something. Mm. Like, I could see them like rearranging how that story goes and repackaging it as an episode of Black Mirror or something.
Yeah, or even like make it like an offshoot and call it just Season of the Witch, and you can actually build a franchise off the Silver Shamrock mythos and all that stuff that they kind of create in that movie, because it's completely separate than what Michael Myers is doing in Haddonfield. So you could literally go 25 years later, 30 years later, stop giving me Michael Myers, right? Everybody knows this movie exists. So why don't you give me 30 years later and see what the people in Silver Shamrock are doing, and maybe like see what that war looks like that all the kids got turned into evil monsters and stuff. You know what I mean? Because it's there, it's right for the picking, and it's completely separate from Michael Myers. I'm passionate about Halloween. I'm sorry, dude.
it's rough because Halloween was yesterday. And yeah, every year around Halloween, I watch Halloween 3 just to like, it's part of a tradition. But this year, yeah, I haven't watched it. I just haven't watched it. I think I really limited the amount of like dark content that I'm trying to consume. Anything that's kind of like horror stuff, I'm not as much consuming that stuff these days, because I feel like there's a whole energy to it that I don't really want to invite.
I do that sometimes too, like, you know, like just like for a couple of weeks just watch comedies and action movies, just light stuff that entertains you, that kind of switches your brain off and kind of puts you at ease. I do that. Oh yeah, that's like, especially if you're writing horror, dude. You know what I mean? Like sometimes I'd be like 10, 12 hours trying to scare myself, because if you're not scaring yourself, what chance you have of scaring the reader? You know what I mean? So,
right.
So like, yeah, it's doing that for 10, 12 hours some days. And then like after that, you do not want to watch horror movies. But like, you know, that's where my ideas come from though. Sometimes, you know, watching other horror movies and stuff.
Well, are there any, it's funny that I was thinking about like transitioning from horror movies and thinking about like conspiracy theories. Like, are there ones that you're like full on like subscribed to that you all the way believe?
Like in terms of conspiracy theories, right? I one show that I used to love growing up was Ancient Aliens. And I thought it was absolutely fascinating. Just the hypothesis, like just the mind game, you know, just the whole thing of like an idea experiment or something. Just think about that. But the more I look into it, the one if you want to call it a conspiracy theory, I suppose, because it's not really proven, is I do believe that earlier on in humanity that there was an advanced race that has been lost to history, like an Atlantis or something like that. I'm a big believer in Atlantis, that I think that that was a real culture that existed. And the reason that humans jumped up in terms of their evolution and their expansion in terms of technologically, architecturally, like in terms of their the farming methods, all these things. And like if you look at Göbekli Tepe, places like this around the world, that I think that an advanced race had their civilization wiped out and the remnants of it spread out across the world. And that's why you see similar motifs and architectural styles in terms of pyramids and things like this. So I'm a big believer in Atlantis, and I kind of became a believer in Atlantis the more I watched Ancient Aliens, because I'm less a believer in aliens coming across the galaxy and more believing that an advanced culture actually spread out and had other people evolve.
Have you come across Billy Carson, The Forbidden Knowledge? Have you ever heard of that? And he goes into the Sumerians and the Anunnaki, and he goes like really educational on it. So if you were going to look up something on YouTube, just look up Billy Carson and start consuming some of that. That's definitely, I think it aligns with where your brain's going, especially going, like he was just in Egypt and he has like a book out where he's like, it's a compendium of the hidden scroll. Like he's like breaking down the
Dead Sea Scrolls.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in the Anunnaki as well, and I definitely think something happened in our history that we don't know. Like it's like Graham Hancock says, we're a species with amnesia, I think is his quote. Like, and I'm a big believer in that too, that like if you look back far enough in the past, we know so little about our own history. Think about like great civilizations that are lost. I love a podcast called Hardcore History by Dan Carlin, and like civilizations get lost so quickly throughout history, like so easily as well. Like there's occasions where great civilizations like, look at the Romans. So like the British didn't even know who built most of these things in Britain, and they were done by the Romans, the greatest civilization that was ever known to man at that speed, that time. Like, and it's so easy for civilizations to get lost after hundreds of years. Could you imagine if there was no written word for a period of 5,000 years? Like 5,000 years. Could you imagine how much was lost right. in those 5,000
Everything
years,
was whispered you know? Down the lane at that point.
It's yeah, like, exactly. Oh, wow.
I heard this had happened. Did you hear what actually happened?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, it's right. like the game of Chinese whispers, and you're playing Chinese whispers for 5,000-10,000 right. years.
Right.
And that's what I think, like, you know, where people came from above and all this kind of thing. It's like, it's an exaggeration of stories that maybe occurred. And that's something I believe in, where maybe they didn't come from above in terms of the sky, but maybe they came from, like, you know what I mean, over the horizon or something like that, where it's just that it's misinterpreted over time. And, like, you know, there's lots of tales of sea people and all these things. And
I was just thinking about how, like, sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
How you said the sea people, the ocean is so big. Like the ocean is so deep and dark and like, there's so much we don't know about what's down there as much as we don't know about all that space that's up there, you know?
Yeah, dude, I think there's more civilization and archaeology that has to be done underwater than there is underground. Like, if you look at the way the sea levels have risen and stuff like this over the thousands of years and hundreds of years, and more like archaeological finds are being found off the coast of countries, like massive discoveries. Like, and that's why I'm a big believer in Atlantis. And if you look at the place, like, I think it's called the Ives of the Sahara, and it has like the whole concentric circles. Like and has it's geography is where it's situated is exactly how Plato described, and like, because like I just think that like it makes sense to me that a civilization was wiped out once upon a time, and that the remnants evolved humanity, and over time the stories of this advanced civilization were probably exaggerated. And that's where, you know, the ancient aliens thing probably comes in, because their technology seems so advanced that they didn't have the words to describe it. And I think, like, you know, things like Thunderbird and stuff like this, that fascinates me, the Native American myth of the Thunderbird. Like, what was that like? You know what I mean? Like, there's just so much there. The humans, like, anthropology is something I wanted to study when I was younger, but I was a procrastinator, and I'll tell you more about that later. Hey, but...
We'll tell you. You know what? Tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. Next time. But human civilization, anthropology, archaeology, all that stuff really fascinates me. But like, there's too much we don't know. Like, do you believe in aliens?
I think so. Yeah. I mean,
it's like the Fermi paradox or something.
It's like that's. There's so much not explainable thing. You know what I mean? Like unexplainable things. Mm. Like that seems like the most, break it all down. It seems like it would make more sense than everything that makes no sense.
Yeah. It's like if you find a squid in the ocean, you're like, it'd make as much sense to find something like that in the vastness of space. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Like it's... Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just, it has to be something out there. It'd be so sad if there's nothing out there. Like, it'd be so boring. Like, dude, like
all that.
Imagine how boring, like, that would be in existence. I get
such a waste of space. Yeah. Space itself is a waste of space. There's nothing out there.
There has to be something out there, dude. Like, could you imagine, like, if we're it? Like, imagine if we're the last remnants of civilization throughout all the entirety of the galaxies. What a disappointment we are.
It feels arrogant to say that we're the only smart thing.
There has to be something
out there. It's ridiculously arrogant to believe that humans are the only smart thing that exists. I mean... Look at even on our planet, like dolphins are smart, right? Like, so there's got to be
octopus, cephalopods themselves are smart.
Did you watch the Beavis and Butthead movie on Paramount? The Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe?
No, is it good?
Oh my God.
Yes. I seen him do America when I was younger. That was awesome.
They did a sequel called Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe. And it's like they do time travel stuff, and the future versions of them are like way in the future. It's like kind of dolphin culture.
Dolphin culture.
It's funny.
Oh man, that's awesome.
Well, what about I just saw something like the other day that made me think. Oh, I was like, I'll ask Vinny about that when we talk on Wednesday. I guess I saw a video that was like Sinead O'Connor talking about how like the famine wasn't real. Have you ever heard of that sort of thing?
So what the hypothesis, which is pretty, it's pretty accurate in a lot of, like, it's kind of been proven that the famine, people say that people really think that the Irish entire culture was sustained by the potato is preposterous, right? The reason we were reliant on the potato is because all of our other crops were being taken away from our country by the British. And we were left with the potato, which is actually not even natural to Ireland, was brought over by Sir Walter Raleigh from South America. So it's not even a natural crop in Ireland. So we were left to sustain the potato. And what happened was there was a massive blight wiping out our only leftover crop that the British allowed us to have, allegedly, to cover myself, right? No, legally or whatever. But like, who's going to sue me from famine times? But like, you know, so it's like the hypothesis is... Yeah, that's the British, pretty much. The British, I got you, green. The hypothesis is that the British stole pretty much all our major crops and grains and all our natural resources, and left us relying on the potato. There was a massive blight one year, wiped out the potato, and left us pretty much starving to death. Millions of people emigrated, and the rest pretty much almost all starved to death. But it was an enforced famine, not by nature, but by colonialism. Suck that, Britain. Okay. What up, Britain?
it's like hey, we want to hear about these things that are interesting and intriguing, and then like not get bummed out by them. but unfortunately, that's the way it's gotta be sometimes.
It's a famine, dude. There's literally, like, you know, there's going to be nothing happy about it. You know, you brought it up, guy.
I'm accountable to that.
I wasn't here, but like, hey, dude, you want to know about the famine?
Hey, man, 9/11, right?
Oh my god! I just want to talk about the architecture. That's it. Like, no, on, yeah, that day, know, in New York.
You ever see that video where the guy does the tightrope walk on the Twin Towers?
Yeah, but
wow, great, huh?
Movie too. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's in that movie, right?
Oh yeah. I forgot they came out with the movie. I never actually watched it.
Yeah, it's good. It's okay. The documentary's better.
Yeah, I think I heard that. Yeah. I watched the documentary. I don't think I ever saw the actual narrative movie that was written.
Yeah,
that was
made. Man on Moyer. It's not the documentary, isn't it? Man on Moyer.
Yes.
45 minutes. He went out in between the Twin Towers. 45 minutes.
45 minutes?
Yeah, that's how long he was on that the high rope, dude.
That's
totally insane. Unnecessary.
Yeah, who just wants to take risks like that?
Just do it once, dude. We get it. You got it done. Just do it once. It's like that dude across the Grand Canyon on a tightrope. Did you see that guy? And he's like, oh, the whole, like, at the end, he's like, oh, Lord,
he did it for so fame, and I don't know who he is.
Yeah, dude, like, oh, man. He went across, like, the Grand Canyon on a tightrope. It was just like, why, like, you know what I mean? And at the end, dude, that dude is panicking, dude. Of course, like, that's where you'd fall, right at the end. That'd be typical. You know, like, do you ever see that guy with, he made the homemade rocket and, like, killed himself? Just exploded. I was like, of course, it's a homemade rocket, dude. Like, what are you doing? He's like, that's, he was a
What a tragedy.
Yeah. The Darwin Awards right there. It's like, it's I think he was a flat earther, and he's like, I want to see if the earth's flat and I'm going to prove it. So he went up in a rocket, homemade rocket, and exploded or something in midair. Like, dude, just no homemade rockets. No, just no. Like, unless Red Bull are sending you up there, just don't do it. Like, you know, right. Red Bull will see you down. Did you ever see that dude when he jumped from the stratosphere?
The Red Bull thing, yeah. I saw.
Or Baumgartner, sorry.
It was a Red Bull thing, right?
Mm.
Yeah, I believe I saw that.
Yeah, dude, that'd be terrifying.
So, how much research and how much credit have you given to any kind of flat Earth theories?
I was on a podcast a while back with David Weiss, I think his name is. Sorry, David, if I got your surname wrong. It's been a while and I've been busy. I know, but like, yeah, I was on. Dylan had him on.
Apologize to him. He's not going to hear this.
Yeah, but Dylan had him on. Dukebox Ginger had him on. Stardom. Actually, it was Clash of Casters back in the day. A few of us. But with every single conspiracy theory or alternate view in the world, I've done a good bit of research on most of them because I'm a really curious dude, like super curious, and I'm not trying to out there disprove people, like, you know, I'm not like creating thesis or creating my own hypothesis and all this kind of stuff, or, you know, but like, I'm very fascinated by people thinking different things. That's one thing I love. I always say to people, differences aren't a bad thing. Some people view differences as the empathy, it's like people see with differences, they always look at it as an obstacle,
challenge.
Yeah, it's challenge. Exactly. That really annoys me. Like, and like, because when I see someone that's different, I'm like, I'm so curious about them. Like, immediately, if I see someone that's complete opposite to me, I become really, really curious about them. And I mean, I'm the exact same thing about different viewpoints of the world, that like, I become so curious about them. Like, that's why I looked at the ancient aliens. I was fascinated by the whole JFK assassination thing. Like, every conspiracy theory, like, and even like him across flat earth or flat earth and all this, like, dude, like, I even looked at the hollow earth theory. I've looked into all these things, like, you know what I mean, because they're fascinating. Even if they're correct or wrong, like, if they're correct, it's even more fascinating, because, like, I mean, our whole existence is completely different than what we perceived it to be, which is insane to think about. But if it's incorrect, it's still a fascinating line of thinking to, like, to kind of expand your mind and viewpoint in the world. And especially as someone who wants to write fiction, you have to look at all these kind of things. And flat earth's intriguing to me, but I don't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, the way my brain went right to, like, there are airports in every city and every country, and and in the airports they map out flight plans that have to do with the earth being around, and the people who are mapping out those flight plans are smarter than me, and for sure smarter than you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like, look at, man, have you ever seen those flight maps? Like, how many airplanes avoid each other every day?
Right. Like, yes.
You know what I mean? Those people are geniuses.
There's no way that they're making the people who map out flight plans sign NDAs to go, like, the earth is flat. Don't tell anybody, you know, the real.
There's like hundreds of thousands of these NDAs all over the place. Right.
Nobody's that good at keeping a secret.
Yeah, like, no, dude, to be a dude on the podcast, he's like, I'm about to break my NDA. Straight
away. somebody pays a compliment to somebody else, a flight plan guy. Hey, you're really good at keeping secrets. And he goes, oh, I'm flat earthed.
Oh my God. Oh, that is fondue levels of cheese right there. Oh my God.
That fondue levels of cheese is my whole brand.
I love it.
So, what do you think happens when you die?
Nothing. Yeah, unfortunately.
Have a great night.
Yeah, I was raised Roman Catholic, like, you know, like most Irish people, like, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And in my teenage years, like, when I left school, I started learning more about history than I ever did when I was in school. And when I was in school, like, I was taught religion up until, like, you know, into my teens. Like, it was part of the curriculum, all these things, because I went to a Christian Brothers school. and all this thing, like, and heaven and hell and Christianity, Catholicism, all this is well ingrained into me and the most Irish younger, most Irish people. And like, the thing about it is that, like, I was raised in all these things about the afterlife and all this, like, but I just don't see it. Like, I just think it's when something's too good to be true, it often is. And I think that, like, an afterlife is almost too good to be true. And I think we're, like, humanity or creation, it's almost very cut and dry. We exist, we try to do the best we can with existence, and then we stop existing. And that's it, really. Unfortunately. You know, I wish there was something cool afterwards, because it'd be so boring to be dead forever. Like, but, like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, you know, you won't know. You won't know. It's not like you're
gonna yeah, exactly. It's not gonna affect me right now. Personally. Like, it'll get me, but it won't affect me, you know. But yeah.
It's boring to not exist. No, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. Yeah, you won't be bored. You won't be bothered at all by not existing. You won't exist.
Oh man, it's true though. Like, but yeah, like, do you believe in an afterlife? Do you think there is something after this, or do we reincarnate, or what? Like, what do you feel?
I'm so ridiculously unsure, and I'm fine with it. Like, I feel like not everybody needs to know every answer to every question. Not everybody needs to like everything. Not everybody needs to understand everything. It's like, it's, I don't think that people, I think we don't know on purpose. There's a good reason we don't know. I listened to do you know who Brian Regan is?
Brian Regan, no.
Brian Regan, he's a comedian. He was a guest on You Made It Weird on Pete Holmes' podcast.
I thought you said I made it weird. I was like, shit, what did I do?
No. he says, and he answered the question, what do you think happens when you die? And he said, it's the one question that nobody knows and everyone will find out. For sure. Yeah. Everyone's going to find out, but you know, like, maybe that's part of what, like, guides you through life is, trying to, like, live a life that would make sense or be valuable, you know, have, you know, as a role model or like an outlier to people for inspiration. So, like, I'd rather live a good life that can, you know, I'm gonna live on through my work, through my words, through my loved ones, the people who I've made impressions on. I think about my friends who I've lost, and like, I don't think about them being with me, and I don't think about them, like, haunting me. I don't think about them in a way of being somewhere else besides nowhere. And not like, I don't want to feel that way. I don't want to feel, I hope they're somewhere. I hope they're doing great, but like, I have no evidence otherwise. Like,
yeah, it's like Tommy Selby says in, do you remember Peaky Blinders? They're just not here anymore. They're just gone.
I didn't watch that show. but yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, also quoting another guest from Pete Holmes' podcast, Dana Carvey was like, hey, do you remember where you were during the Civil War? And he was like, no, I don't know. I didn't exist. And he's like, yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like before we were born. It's just nothing. Like,
right.
Unless we were somewhere else. And then we just don't have those memories.
Yeah. What if we were under the sea? What if we go back to living like a fish? What if we're squids?
I hate open bodies of water, so I'd suck as a fish. like if I've got consciousness,
the version of you that hates it won't be existing anymore.
No, my hatred for open bodies of water will still carry over into my fish form. I was just like, I thought I couldn't hate existence anymore, and I already did, but here we are.
it's really funny, man, because I think I do feel like a lot of like hatred and a lot of a lot of emotion is just human. It's so human. You know what I mean? As soon as you're free of being human, the ego is lifted. You're like the idea of like this person was evil, and like maybe they're just, you know, misinformed or too fragile of a being to zoom back out of it a little bit more and be like, hey, here's a bigger picture of things.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like, and I've said this a bunch of times on here, but I feel like what we all are is a little piece of what God is, right? So like I look at what God is as like the oxygen, the wind blows through the trees and the oxygen comes out and we breathe that all in. I think that's the same thing that sparks the electricity that keeps our brains alive. So that's the same breath in and out of our lungs. I think that's part of God. And I think that's inside of us, that's that spark inside of us. So like we're always kind of a piece of God. And I don't think that goes nowhere. I mean, I feel like it's got to go somewhere. And at the same time, I still think we're living as long as people remember us, you know, as long as people take some of that wind, some of that energy, some of that God energy from you and still keep living it through and still keep being inspired by what inspired you in some way.
It's kind of like, isn't it? Like, I'm probably going to wreck this quote, but it's like there's a quote like, we're all made from stardust, and then to stardust we will return, or some stuff like that. It's like that, like that's pretty much we become part of the universe after, you know, we break down and return, and like that we're all just made from the same matter and all this kind of stuff. But like,
either you die and you become a fish, or you die and you become a star. And that's one.
Yeah, it's like Lion King or something. Yeah,
it's just like Lion King. you, Puma.
Corey, remember, Corey. dude, is it cool if I switch my headphones because they're just about to die? And I just, one second, I just had to grab them. Sorry, dude. Go I'm really on, sorry man. With this.
Go ahead.
Sorry,
go ahead. Dude. I love that you're like,
I'm sorry about this. I'm so sorry.
You don't have to be so apologetic. It's okay.
It's my Irish upbringing, dude.
I think I say that to anybody who starts apologizing to me for stuff that they shouldn't be too sorry about. I always go, hey, man, stop being so sorry. It's not affecting me in a way that really hurts my guts. I especially like you know, when you walk past somebody and are trying to like nudge past, and then they'll say sorry, and I'm like, you don't have to say sorry, just say excuse me. Just you say excuse me. If you say sorry, then it to me, I go like, this person's used to apologizing for existing. Like myself, I'd stop. I started I guess last year, or I can't remember. Just it's been within the last couple of years where I've said, I'm tired of apologizing for stuff I'm not sorry for.
Yeah.
And I'm for sure not sorry about taking up space in between. You know what I mean? I'm certainly like, I own the space I'm in. I deserve to be here. So I'm not apologizing for just existing.
Dude, the whole Irish thing that I was told when I was in primary school, the reason we say sorry instead of excuse me is that when we were ruled by the British, that like we had to apologize for being in their way. So instead of saying excuse me, we would apologize so that we would say sorry. So that's why like most Irish people, when we were kind of budging past people, we say sorry instead of excuse me, because it's kind of ingrained into us through, you know, hundreds of years of colonization. I'm really after the British today for some reason. I love all Britons.
Let's bag on the British some more.
Oh dude, I was my headphones were dying though for like the last like 10 minutes. I was like, oh no, don't die on my headphones. Oh dude, Bluetooth technology never fails to disappoint.
Yeah, I stopped wearing headphones during the podcast because like my ears started hurting, like it would push my ears up against my head. And it was a mixture of that and like I think like I saw a lot of people were starting to like lose their hair from headphones on the top of their head.
Oh really?
And I don't want that.
He's got that luscious mane there, so you do.
I don't know if you can tell, but I absolutely can't tell, but under my hair, like from right here all the way up through my hair right here, there's a big old scar. I had a brain surgery in 2011 and all my hair grew right back. Right. So they just like shaved a little strip of my hair.
Yeah.
And then it all grew right back. But there's a big old scar under here. So if I put headphones on and I get a bald spot right where my scar is, I'm going to be traumatized. So therefore, I stopped wearing headphones.
It's a fair trade-off, though, isn't it? You know what I mean? Dude, if I could turn the clock back in my hairline, I would. But here we are.
Do you have bald spots? Did you lose your hair?
No, it's just, yeah, it's thinning, dude. You know, I'm getting there, dude. It's in my family, dude.
Yeah.
It's getting there, dude. There's no escape, dude. There's no escape. There's only valiant defense.
Yeah, man, I've been super, super grateful. I'm super grateful all the time that I have this hair. The fact that, like, it came,
naturally,
you know, the whole brain surgery thing and like them having to shave it for it to come right back and it absolutely not even be noticeable at all.
Yeah.
Like, I tell anybody about it, they don't ever believe it ever happened.
Why do you mind me asking, why did you need to get brain surgery? Was it an accident or something? Or you?
So I had what's called an AVM, a cranial AVM. So it was an arterial venous malformation. So basically like the in utero, the veins in my frontal lobe here, they crossed instead of going how they're supposed to go. They crossed. So it caused a brain bleed and my brain was bleeding into the front of my skull and it caused me to have like a real bad grand mal seizure. And then they had to do a craniotomy. It sounds so barbaric to be like, I had craniotomy, but they cut my head all the way across and then they peeled my face down. So like they peeled my face down and then put a little metal plate up in here, a titanium plate. And they cut my skull open and then they resectioned the veins and then they screwed it back on with titanium screws and a titanium plate and then stapled my face back on. But if you
stapled my face back on. Face off.
Yeah, exactly. So like some of this, I have like some scar tissue right in the middle of my head right here.
Dude.
and I have like this little pocket right here, like this little dent, and that's it. That's it. I got to go back to wrestling. Like I was out of the ring for 13 months. That's it.
Oh my God. Isn't that insane?
It's so crazy, and I'm so blessed, and I'm so lucky, and I'm so in love with living this life, and how much I feel like everything I've had is such bonus. Everything I ever do, I want to inspire people, and I want to help people, and I want to like grow and be better, and I want to use my voice, use my platform. I want to definitely assist people any way I can. I want to be a resource to people, and I don't know how many other people have kind of gone through something that's been that big of a challenge and made it through and been this blessed.
And you're healthy as well. It's not like, you went back wrestling, like one of the most physically like toughest, professions on the planet. And it's crazy that you can literally get your skull cracked open, your face peeled off, stapled back on, a piece of metal put in your skull. And not only are you here to tell the tale, but you're still like kicking ass. Like, That's insane, dude. Like, Medical science, man. And you got all your hair back.
Look at all this hair I got.
You're just flaunting it, dude. Dude, you're just flaunting it now.
Look at all this cool hair I get to have.
Dude, you're going to have to trim some of that and send it to Ireland to hook a brother up.
I know my mom is 100% Irish when she did her genealogy, her ancestry.
Oh, really?
I believe it said my mom's 100% Irish. My grandmother was also, I guess, 100% Irish. But the weird part about it is, and this is something that's like fresh in my brain, and I've been thinking about a lot lately. My grandma is a, if I can, I want to say this in a way that doesn't sound like shocking, but my grandmother is a product of rape. My great grandmother was raped by her dentist, and my great grandmother had to move from where they lived to Philly, and my grandmother was put up for adoption, and like a lot of like our family, we have no idea, like there's just no way we can tell, like.
What your lineage is, pretty much.
No real idea. And I get curious about that a lot, because I go like, I know I'm the only wrestler in my family. No one else in my family is even a wrestling fan. Not even, I'm like, what if I do have family members who are also wrestlers, also wrestling fans? Like it's just curious to me.
Because something gave you the predilection, because it's all ingrained into us what attracts us to the things we like, and wrestling's all about the adrenaline, entertaining people, working with the crowd, so that must be somewhere in you from your past. Because
my grandmother said that she had met her biological mother, and her biological mother was a huge wrestling fan. She said, oh, we used to watch wrestling together. So I have a whole other part of my family that I have no idea. Cause like, I don't know the dentist. Like I think somebody from that family reached out to my sister on Ancestry. And kind of didn't go any further with it after not kind of filling in whatever the blanks are. because maybe they were didn't want to destroy their image of what their pop-up was.
Imagine finding that in your, like, imagine being the dentist dude's family and then you find out that you're like, this guy's an absolute piece of shit that you knew all your life, like, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Like, because like there's no other way around it, the dude's a piece of shit, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so
just like men from generations ago all suck, like,
yeah,
like somehow men have been getting away with like so much abuse on women for so long, and like I can't even imagine that being something I have anything to do with. Like, I can't imagine ever trying to like trick anybody to, I can't imagine ever like being okay with myself doing that.
Or trying to manipulate, or trying to manipulate people. I never understood why people try to manipulate one another. What is your gain? Like, like when people, like, one thing I never try to do is manipulate people, because it's not only does it take so much effort, I'm naturally lazy, but like, no, but like, you know what I mean? But like, it's
just, keep up with your life.
Yeah, it's like, what, dude, what, I have to like follow your life, pay attention to everything they say, that it's so much effort. But like, no, I just never understand why people are unfair with each other. Like, that's something that always bugs me, when people are unfair with one another, because it's so unnecessary a lot of the times. Like, and to manipulate people or to hurt people for no reason is just, to me, I think it's a silly thing to do that has really real world consequences, and it's an unnecessary thing to do that has real world consequences, to like try to manipulate someone or try to exert your control or dominance over people that are no way affecting you. Like, so I'm totally, I don't understand that side of human nature. And like, as dudes, like, a lot of the times men are the ones that are guilty of it the most, but like, you know, women aren't innocent either. They can play the game too. But like, you know, we do it in a way more harmful way, I think, a lot of the times. Physically harmful.
Well, I think it's just selfishness for the most part. It's just self-preservation. I think a lot of times, like, anybody who's like harmed me or manipulated me in any way, I'll go back and I'll in my brain and in my heart, I forgive them, like, without them ever even asking for it, because ultimately that helped create who I am now, and I love who I am. So, you gotta have the rain to appreciate the sunshine, kind of thing.
Yeah, we're just some of all our experiences, like, you know what I mean? Good and bad, everything's an experience that makes us who we are.
Right. Mm. Exactly. So it's all bonus. It's all what's the win or learn? Like, either you win or you learn. There's no lose. Yeah.
So exactly. Every experience is a learning experience. That's one thing, like, I've found out a lot this year, that like, that life can kick you in the ass a lot. Like, and like, if you're not willing to learn, life's going to keep kicking you in the ass. And if you don't learn how to block a few kicks, your ass is going to get pretty red after a while. So like, you need to learn from your losses. And like, one thing I've done a lot this year is I've had some losses, I've had some defeats, whatever, and I had some complications from a professional person, whatever, all these things. But like, you keep on trucking, you keep on learning, and then eventually you'll start figuring out the answers to your problems, and then you'll start like becoming a better person, or improving, or figuring out ways to improve yourself to help other people. I think that's really important, that you need to learn from your defeats. Enjoy your victories. Victories are awesome. They're way more rare than defeats, though. Be honest with yourself. We get defeated way more than we ever win, but really, really enjoy your victories. I mean that. Appreciate your victories, but learn from your defeats. And if you can consistently learn from your defeats, the defeats come a little bit less frequent, and the victories start piling up eventually. And just keep doing that. That's what I tell anybody. If like, if you get defeated, don't let it keep you down. Put you down, but don't let it keep you down.
There's always something to be grateful for. There's always something. There's always something that like you're overlooking in your victimhood. I mean, I've been there, where you're like, oh man, like, I just can't catch a break. It's like,
I get super fragile.
Then I go like, I have so many other things to be grateful for. And I have to constantly check myself with that sort of thing and think about, like, write a list out of things that I'm grateful for. the pros and the cons of what's going on, but I'll just focus on the pros.
Yeah, there's a method. Like, you wake up every day, say the five things you're most grateful for to yourself every morning. When you wake up, you say the five things you're most grateful for every single day. Remind yourself that even if you got bad stuff going on in your life, that there's always things that will put a smile on your face. I've got a young daughter. No matter how miserable I am, as soon as I think of something funny she says to me, or I'll send her a text or something, she always puts a smile on my face. You always have things you're grateful for, whether it's your work, whether it's personal, whether it's people in your life, anything. Find things to be grateful for, because otherwise you're just going to be a negative, morose human being all your life, and it's just going to weigh on you. And it's just, and we all have down spells. Everybody has down spells. Like, we're all humans. Like, as you said earlier, like, you know, it's the, when the defeats, like, you get on a bad run and you can't see the other side of that rut, and you're just really, really down in yourself. And then you have to remember, what was I? Who was I before the rut? What was I? Who was I before I started getting these defeats? And how do you learn to win again? And that's what life's all about. Just keep figuring out how to win again.
I mean, I like to look at this like constantly with asking anybody, like, yeah, whatever your problems are, whatever your biggest issues are, say maybe to yourself, if my best friend was going through this, if somebody I loved the most was going through this same thing, how would I advise them?
My brother says that to me all the time.
and also, like, would I want to be around me if I wasn't me? Would I want to be somebody listening to my problems if I wasn't me? Like, what can I be that's greater than like these circumstances? Because circumstances are always going to come up. So if circumstances constantly come up and you fold every time circumstances come up that aren't favorable, like, how many times can you expect people to, like, still have your back and still be your support system if like you're going to be defeatist?
Exactly. Because, yeah, like, at the end of the day, like, people will pick you up, but you have to stay on your own two feet after they pick you up. And it's your job to stay on your own two feet after being picked up. And then eventually, as you say, you can't just keep relying on people. If you are a defeatist, you're going to keep being defeated because you're not going to try to figure out how to win. And that's what life is all about. Like, learn from your defeats, because your defeats will teach you how to win and teach you how to improve yourself. But you have to have the right mentality and the right attitude to keep getting back up. Because eventually, like, as you say, people will stop picking you back up and they will leave it to yourself. And if you don't haven't figured out a way to pick yourself back up at that stage, you're going to stay down forever. Like, and that's the thing about life. Like, so what I would say to anybody is, if you're getting your ass kicked, just, like, figure out how to block a few things. Just, like, just shell up for a while. If you want to be fragile, be fragile. Everybody has fragile moments. Shell up for a while. Figure out what you're going to do when that shell cracks. And then when that shell cracks, if you haven't figured out what your actual defenses are, then you're doomed. You know what I mean? But, like, that's the whole thing. Shell up for a while, be fragile. But at the end of the day, figure out what you're going to do when the shell cracks, because you got to be ready to be picked back up again and go after it, you know?
Vinny, man, just a few more things and I'll send you off into the sunset with a hot dog and a handshake. All right.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, brother.
So I speak about it. I'm stuttering. Sorry. Excuse me.
Take your time.
Not sorry. I'm not sorry.
Not sorry. Excuse
not
me.
Not sorry. For it. Excuse me. Please.
I have excused you. Could you imagine if that was the response?
if everybody who says excuse me must be excused by the person they ask. I beg your pardon. You don't have to beg. You don't have to beg. You have my pardon.
You have my pardon. It's cool, dude. We're good. We're good.
So, oh, man, dude, awesome. I'm always super fascinated with having conversations that are on the record. The part of it being on the record for me is important, because this stuff is outliving us. I look at this as like it's me almost creating a legacy and giving a platform for the, you know, like, let me say, I called the show Evolving with Corey Castle, not because I'm Corey Castle, but it's like the version of me that you're going to hear in episode one versus episode 311 is going to be a different guy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I say that because I want to say on the record how much I appreciate your time. I appreciate the currency of your effort. And I'm looking forward. Let me just say, let me be a resource to you in any way. If you ever think of something, if you want to like brainstorm on ideas for your next horror book, if you want to write a book about a raping dentist from the 1900s, from the early 1900s,
there's a short story there for sure. Like, you know what I mean? I could tell you this. Yeah, dude, I could throw 10,000 words at that, no problem. Like, you know what I mean? It's not going to be good. Like the story would be good, but like it's going to be vicious. Like,
it's not gonna, it's not gonna be a feel good time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, be a good story, just not good to read.
No, but like, if I could be any kind of a creative resource to you in any way, please don't ever feel like you're bothering me. Don't ever feel like I'm too busy. That's one of my things that I really, I'm not a huge fan of when people say like, oh, I know you're busy all the time. I know you're busy all the time and I don't want to bother you. I'm like, I'm not too busy. I'm not too busy to write you back. I'm not too busy to hold some space for you. If you have some stuff going on and you just need judgment-free conversation with a friend, my DMs are always wide open.
Appreciate you, man. You're a legend. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you having me, man. I really appreciate you putting yourself out there, man, saying that you'll help me out anytime, man. I really like that, dude. You're a legend.
I say that to say you've been on the podcast now, and I've been asking you questions. Now it's the chance you get to ask me anything you want to ask me, or you want to say anything to me that's on the record. It's gonna continue on.
Dude, being a big pro wrestling fan growing up myself, and you being a pro wrestler, I have to ask you, who were your inspirations and what made you want to be a wrestler?
My inspirations were probably, I'd say Shawn Michaels probably was number one inspiration. Okay. Main thing that made me, I think, want to be a wrestler. Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Triple H, Edge.
All pretty solid top five. Pretty solid top five.
Pretty much any long-haired white guy.
Well, you got a continuous motif, dude. I like consistency in people as well. You
know what I mean? I love Eddie Guerrero. I love Booker T. Like, I love Kurt Angle. There's a whole bunch of like this era of like
the Attitude Era
badasses that inspired me. And the NWO, yeah. And The Rock.
Yeah. Man, like then the 90s, the Attitude Era, like the Monday Night Wars was just the pinnacle of wrestling. I think it was, man, where I still had the mystique left over from the 80s, and it still had these larger than life like characters, and you had like this, like when you have like the WCW, NWO, and then you have WWF at the time with the Attitude Era, man. It's just like, I've watched the Monday Night Wars documentary like four times in my lifetime, I think. That's four or five times. It's so good, man. You know, and another one, the collapse of ECW, or the downfall of ECW, I think it's called, another amazing documentary. Rise and Fall. Sorry, dude. Yeah, that's a great documentary, man. Absolutely great documentary. Yeah.
Like, you know that I'm from where ECW came from, right?
Of course,
I live in Philly, and that's where I went to ECW shows all the time when I was a kid. So like they would be on my local TV here, like and for sure, like this is the birthplace of like extreme wrestling and hardcore wrestling. Like I had my first match at the ECW arena in 2003.
That's crazy, right? That must have been surreal.
It was definitely surreal. It was, I'd never been to the ECW arena before that, because my mom didn't want to take me down to South Philly because she thought it was too dangerous. So I was also definitely when ECW was around, I was too young. Like I was, I was 12. My mom wasn't taking me to South Philly when I was 12.
Man, that's insane, man.
but I went there for the first time in 2001, and then I wrestled there for the first time in 2003, and man, it was very surreal. It was definitely like it felt like I was part of history at that point. And yeah,
Paul Heyman's just mad genius, though, isn't he?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Is there anybody better on a microphone than Paul Heyman? Oh my god. No. Some of his monologues are just next level. That guy. <Yeah.
laughs> He's a master, man. Anybody, look up anybody who's an expert who's mastered something. It is Paul Heyman and the art of like emotions. And the art of like emoting and, yeah, and manipulating other people's emotions with his monologues. He definitely should get like an Oscar for some of the promos that he does.
And dude, the energy he puts into every single promo, like, it's like, where does he get it from? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, and like, he's undeniable as well, because every guy to put with him, like, their career goes to new heights every single time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, every dude that's ever been paired with Paul Heyman, pretty much their career has gone to new heights. Like, look at Roman Reigns. Like, you know, I don't follow wrestling quite close as I used to, but I still follow some of the pages because, like, you know, the curiosity is always going to be there. But like, what Roman Reigns has done with the Tribal Chief thing with Paul Heyman and the Bloodline and all that, it just once again shows the Paul Heyman, his influence over wrestlers and storylines and the believability behind those storylines is kind of ageless. That
A very cool thing he's been doing recently is when Roman has to take time off or isn't on the brands for a while, yeah. Paul's hair, he lets it all go gray. All the dye goes out of his hair and he stops wearing makeup. So like his skin's all pale and stuff. And then when Roman comes back, he puts the color back in his hair and he puts all the makeup back on. It's like he is physically, like, visibly affected by the absence of the Tribal Chief. It is a level of storytelling that no one has the same commitment as him.
Man, he's just like every single show, it just seems that he puts everything into it, and he is a creative genius. Like, you know, like what he did with ECW, like on the budget and the limitations that he faced, was just crazy. Like, you know what I mean? And the fact that like you give him something like a playground like the WWE, like, you know, like I think you let Paul Heyman do whatever Paul Heyman wants to do, and I think the possibilities are limitless, you know.
I love the marketing idea of how he went, like, it's us versus all of them big time. We're here because they want you to have that kind of product, but we're going to give you this kind of product. I loved that. The whole, like, he compared, like, the rock and roll scene, I guess.
Yeah.
And all of what was going on. He said, like, there's hair metal in the 80s and then the 90s were like pro wrestling was stuck in this like occupational sort of like hair metal sort of state, and he was like, we're going to be the Nirvana of professional wrestling,
counterculture. We're gonna
be the grunge metal, change up what the whole thing is. And I want to do that to wrestling now because wrestling now is, especially on the independent level, is definitely formulaic as hell. Like you know, you're going to see, and I mean, even if you're watching WWE or AEW, everything kind of follows the same 7 steps for every match. And everything looks more like back in the 90s or 80s and 90s, when you watch wrestling, it didn't look like they had every single thing planned out ahead of time. Yeah. And that was what made, like, it looks faker now because it looks like they're dancing. It looks like
more polished.
It's so polished that people just go, I don't even care to watch all that.
It's like when you watch a poorly choreographed movie or an overly choreographed movie where you can see the steps, you can see the pre-plans, whereas like it's like what you're talking about in the Attitude Era, mistakes happened and like it was a bit messier and it was a bit crazier. But because of that, like if anyone's ever been in a brawl in their entire life, it's fighting is so messy. Fighting in a crowd is even messier. Fighting with a crowd is even messier. So like all those kind of things were wrestling back in the 90s. I thought they encapsulated the reality of what it was like to be in an actual street fight. And it was kind of like, you know, back in the 90s, we're like, yeah, this is kind of like, it's almost always a street fight, but like, you know, it's messier. It's more visceral, I think, as well, because of the bloodletting. I know, like, you know, you don't want that to happen all the time, but like, you know, with the bloodletting and stuff that happened back then, the cutting, like it was a lot more visceral back then. I think now you can see the product, and the fact is that the kind of mystique has kind of been gone as well, because everyone has the social media presence now, so, and everyone kind of knows the kayfabe things and all these kind of stuff. So like I think like the 90s, there was this purple patch when you had the Monday Night Wars and you had ECW in its heyday, and it still had a little bit of the mystique left over from the 80s, but it was turning into this whole new product in a whole new way. And I think that's why the 90s might have been the pinnacle of pro wrestling, in my opinion, because it had all the ingredients that I needed for pro wrestling to be believable, even though, like, you know what I mean? It's not that it's fake. Everything that happens is real. The result is predetermined, but like everything in between the ropes is real. Real bumps, real violence, real falls. Everything's hurt. Like everything hurts. Yeah, exactly. Real pain. Like everything hurts. Like, you know, so like as Jim Ross used to say, try to teach a guy to fall 20 foot from a ladder, you know, try to teach a guy to.
There's no class.
Yeah, there's no class for that. Exactly. You know, so that's kind of a lesson for life. You know, there's no class for falling from a ladder, but.
I definitely think now it's gotten to the point where like is like they it's like too bubble wrapped. It's too safe. Yeah. Like it's too like, all right, well, we want it to be safe because we have publicly invest this company's public, and we want to make sure everything goes the way we want it to go. So that we don't piss off the stockholders or any of that kind of stuff. And I think it's gotten also to the point, and I've come up with this word, and you can use it, please do. The lines are so blurred because of social media. It's like you can't tell if it's storyline or if it's real on a lot of things because of like social media.
Yeah,
and I've been calling that grayfabe.
Grayfabe, I like it.
The real gray zone of can't tell if it's worked or shoot. Grayfabe is the word. Hashtag grayfabe.
Good grayfabe lives matter.
So I do this segment where I call it audio time travel. You know, almost as we were talking about this outliving us and continuing on. So let's say 20 years from now, in the year 4023, the day before your birthday, your daughter stumbles across this content, this recording in a like a time stamp type way, time capsule of right now. The messages that you'd want your daughter to hear.
What would
in the next couple minutes? What would those messages be? You're speaking directly to her. This is the time travel. You're traveling right into the ears of your daughter 20 years from now.
I'll tell her one thing and one thing only, and that is, Astrid, spend my money well, because there's going to be a lot of it to go around. That's it. Yeah. Yes, sir.
And Astrid, I hope you listened to this whole show. I hope you dug the show, and you know, you could go check out all the other episodes, man. maybe something will be helpful for you. Maybe something will be valuable in your life.
And hopefully, I'm still alive.
I know you will be.
A Barbie.
I don't, I don't say that. Like, it's outliving us to go like, yeah, you're gonna die.
Yeah. It better be the day before my 56th birthday is all I'm saying. And I better be showing it to her, because I'm like, there's this one time I was on this awesome podcast.
This is outliving us, aka you're gonna die. This is a feel good time.
Yeah. It's like you see a red dot go on my forehead right as we're going off air.
The way we wrap up episodes is I do this thing where I hypothetically I've gifted you this show. This would be the first episode of your new podcast, Evolving with Vinny Green. The very first episode in a very Jerry Springer's final thought type of way, wrap up what you would say the most valuable takeaways from this conversation have been, and inspire people to be a better version of themselves. What would you say?
I would say to anyone that life is filled with challenges and obstacles and all these kind of things, but don't look at them as barriers. Look at them as opportunities. Because when you're faced with a challenge or you're faced with an obstacle, it's not a barrier from you becoming who you are. It's an opportunity for you to improve who you are, because all these things will teach you valuable lessons in life to be able to evolve as a human being and be able to move past what you are now and who you are now. Because if you keep your mind closed and if you don't open up your mind to new possibilities, you're never going to change. You're just going to be locked into the same state of creation that you are now. And that is absolutely pointless. So I'd say to anyone, just open your mind to new possibilities. Never be afraid to challenge yourself. Never be afraid to leap over an obstacle if it presents itself in front of you. And never be afraid to listen to anyone who has a different opinion about something than you, because that's also an opportunity to learn. Because all we're learning creatures, so always be available and always be interested in learning new things and new ways of existing, because it's the only way for you to actually reach your full potential as a person, in my opinion.
I love that. I do. Vinny, do you do any impressions?
Oh god, no, dude. I'm trash at accents. I'm sorry, dude. I seen that at the end of Alejandro's show and I was like, oh, I really hope he's only asking comedians to do impressions. I was like, oh no. I was like, Alejandro, it's like he didn't do well with Seth Rogen. I'm putting it out there, Alejandro. And I was watching that and I was like, oh my god, if he comes at me with impressions, I am doomed. So yeah, dude,
it's funny because you said accents right away. You said I'm not good with accents.
And yeah.
And it made me think about how I'm bad at deciphering accents. I'm really like when people have really strong accents sometimes, it really twists up the words in my head. Like I saw Nate Bargatze a couple years ago, and he was talking about, do you know who Nate Bargatze is?
No,
he's a comedian who's like from Tennessee, and he has like a strong like Southern accent. And he was talking about a Civil War reenactment, but I swore he said a silverware reenactment. And I was like, is that when you get the knives and the forks and the spoons? And then when you were saying the life would be pointless, I was like, it sounded like to me, because your thick accent, I was like, did he say pintless? Like a bar without pint glasses? We're a pintless bar. We only got mugs here.
Yeah, that my accent, like I'm from the Midlands, so we kind of mispronounce certain words, like even though like I'd be considered well spoken enough, that like a TH becomes a D and stuff like that. And we drop letters at the end of certain words. So yeah, so instead of me saying pointless, I'd say pointless, because like that's the way we say it, because you know. That's just the way we say it.
We have mugs at this bar.
Mugs, drink straight from the tap, dude. Come on, we're Irish. Just like, yeah, you know, just put that head back behind the bar and just drink till you pass out. It's what we do.
So, since no impressions.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No impressions, just...
Only good ones. I hope I made a good impression.
if you want... Just say the end, the way we wrap up the show, you say, be fun, have safe, keep evolving.
Do you want me to say now?
Yeah.
All right, folks. Be fun. Have safe. Keep evolving. With Corey Castle, and I'm Vinny Green.
See you anybody who's been with us this whole time, checking out the whole show. I appreciate you so much. The only thing I'll ever ask is, you know, just let me know you exist, man. If you've dug this piece of content, just interact with it somehow. Let me know you exist. Prove to me that you exist. Comment, like, share, subscribe, any of those things. And, you know, make sure you stay kind. Stay kind to yourself more than anybody. I mean, more than anything, stay kind to yourself. Because if you don't love yourself, how are you going to love everybody else? How are you going to love anybody else? Be fun. Have safe. Keep evolving. Show's over.